Hi, and on today's episode of the Roots to Wings podcast series by Balanceology, we're going to be talking about home working, the impact that the pandemic has had on our working methods, how employers have had to adapt in these times, and how they may revert back to type once things slowly get back to, so say, normal. Jane's going to give us some great advice on how we can approach our employers with more flexible solutions and how employers themselves should be able to accommodate your requests. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Roots to Wings Balanceology podcast with me, Dylan.
And me, Jane. And Blade.
And Blade.
We have our dog with us again today.
He hopefully won't be barking too much in the background. Today, we're going to be talking about a big issue that's probably affecting a lot of people now up and down the country at the moment as we speak. And that is one of, as we return back to normal, coming out of this lockdown and hopefully getting a grip of the pandemic, a lot of people will be returning back to an office where they may have been working from home for the last, well, could have been almost a year now for some people. And that's going to be a difficult transition because as inconvenient as working from home may have been at some points, it's also, from our opinion, probably brought a lot of good stuff to people as well, Jane.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's been some massive advantages to, well, for example, for you, at the different stages where you would have otherwise been in an office, it's just brought so much more flexibility and extra time with the children as well as its challenges. There's been lots of upshots to it, haven't there?
Definitely. It's been challenging, but you lose a commute. So that's gain time in the morning, helping to get the kids ready or take the dog for a walk or however you want to use that in the morning. There's just more time to just do little bits around the house in lunch breaks or breaks. And actually, I found it more productive. So in many ways, it's been really helpful. It depends on the kind of job that you do. I guess some jobs rely more on face-to-face contact than others. But really what's happening now is what I'm seeing is some employers are very keen to get their employees back into the office. And it's really around that, Jane, why do we think employers, although things have been working for many people, been working well, or if not better, why is there that need to get everybody back into an office?
Well, I think there's actually multiple reasons, and it depends on the who it is we're talking about and actually what sort of generation they're in, although that's a massive sort of stereotype and sort of don't want to tar all of the older generations with the same brush, but I think there is...
You have.
I think there is still a hesitancy to trust from the older generations, to trust that the younger employees will actually be working when they say they're working, even though it's been so widely demonstrated that people are actually doing above and beyond, in some cases, what they were actually doing when they came into the workplace, because some people have massive guilt about needing to show that they have been working, so they then go and do more.
Yeah, I think some people I've talked to said that they've actually been putting in more hours at home than they would be because they don't have a commute either side. Some of our friends don't have children, so they have more time to give to their work.
Yeah, and there's been such a blurring of boundaries that a lot of people that have been approaching me about burnout have been saying that it's been essentially eating into every hour of their day, more so than it was previously. So so one is trust. I think that some of the older sort of generation might be just not trusting, but I think there is a benefit to being in person together, and I think that's one of the things that anybody having come through this experience so far will have been missing. Despite all the positives they might take, one of the negatives is definitely human contact. But it's part of our human existence, and there's a reason why we enjoy getting together and going and having experiences together. It's because you can't replace that virtually. It's just not the same. So I think some sort of the more progressive employers are maybe thinking, well, let's get people back in the space together, because there's an energy to that that brings more enthusiasm and momentum for a business to carry it forward, and they maybe feel they need to kind of reignite the workforce.
You would think in that situation that they had already been relatively progressive before the lockdown had forced sort of home working, and that therefore employees in those situations would have already established clear ways of communicating and needing to be together for their job, that they'd be eager to get back to that now, yeah. perhaps. I was thinking, this is probably right the other end of the scale, that a lot of decisions we make are often down to our personal circumstance. So even if you're running a business, if you've traditionally always gone to the office and that's been your escape from an environment at home that you're maybe not comfortable with in your, you know, you need an escape from your home mm-hmm. environment, then enforcing that on your staff would be sort of a natural thing to do, because that's what you feel you need. So you would feel everybody else needs that. So maybe looking at it from the angle that some people have been working from home and they've really struggled with that.
Mm.
Employers may be like, I can't work from home, so
everyone's coming back.
Yeah, everyone's coming back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, quite possible.
And I think that's a kind of, it could be an age and stage thing, or it could be just a personal case by case kind of individual circumstantial thing. But it's employers' duty, I believe, to take a step back and think, what's actually best, not just for my business, but for my employees.
Yeah, and the only way they can really determine that is to ask. Is yeah. to ask their workforce, what do you actually want? What would your ideal be? And it doesn't need to be so...
extreme.
Yeah.
The polarity of either yeah. either it has to be at home or it has to be in the office.
Exactly.
It could be somewhere in the middle.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's where everybody's balance would be slightly different. That sort of set point somewhere in their own version of the middle. My version of that wouldn't be the same as yours, wouldn't be the same as the person next door, you know. And so I think that's the part, and that's the more tricky part, is we're so used to setting up systems and structures that's like a blanket uniform. This is exactly how everybody's going to be.
Black and white.
You know, and it's not, life isn't like that. And I think this is an opportunity for us to find ways to get creative and set things up in such a way that the individual's needs are actually valued and respected and accommodated.
Absolutely. And I think the feedback I've seen from people in articles and interviews and anecdotally from friends is that that mixture of being able to have more flexibility in their job and having proven that they can do it well with homeschooling, with the pandemic, you know, putting pressure on them at home to be able to be efficient, they've been able to do it through that. Surely when things are slowly getting back to the more routine ways that we had before, where kids are back in school and, you know, travel's allowed, I think surely that combination with being able to, having done it in the hardest time, could work well for a lot of people anyway.
Yeah, well, I personally feel that we've got a kind of a bit of a false start at the moment. I think we'll have this sense of, you say, things getting back to normal.
Oh, here she goes.
I don't...
Conspiracy theory time, guys. Just make a cup of coffee if you're not interested in this. Jane's going to go into one.
I genuinely don't... Well, one, I don't think it would be great to go back to what was normal, because it was positively destructive. However...
Positively destructive? Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry, yeah. It wasn't destructing things positively.
No.
It was definitely destructive.
Okay, yeah. But also... I think there are going to be more curveballs ahead that we can't even necessarily foresee at the moment, and
such is life.
Yeah, but at this particular moment in time, I think things are being shaken up and are falling apart for a reason, so that we can rebuild them in ways that work better. So I think it would be naive to go back and try and slot back in where we left off, because we're not who we were a year ago. Most of us have reflected, hopefully, and taken sort of
stock.
Yeah. And I think it's time for us all to speak up and actually voice what it is we really want, so that we can change things in a positive way.
It's nicely framed. If you'd like to join our revolution, please do sign up on our website. No, obviously that's a joke. This is not a pyramid selling scheme in any way, shape or form. However, yeah, I think you're right. I think there's, you know,
I think we need to be more flexible, so that
we need to approach it as if it's, rather than a return to normal, it's a new dawn, a new opportunity for us to do things differently, having accumulated the knowledge that we have over the last year.
Yes, and to be agile, because I think there's going to be more changes coming.
Doom and gloom, Jane. No, I'm trying to be positive.
In a good way. This is good. This is positive. I think there'll be more changes coming and challenges that will eventually mean that we get even better at fine-tuning things so that eventually the model we're working with is fits for all and is so much better than the stupid industrial structures that we've been working with for hundreds of years.
They are outdated. Yeah. And I think it's sad that it took a pandemic for us to actually review them. Because I was saying this to you earlier when we were out on a walk, that if this pandemic hadn't have happened, who knows when we would have reviewed these kind of things.
Exactly.
Excuse me.
Yeah. And so from that, I feel, yeah, it's a great time for people to look at what they can take from this and plug in the parts that they want to keep and then let go of the rest. And then the next time something comes that is challenging, they're that bit better set up to kind of move with it and move around it and change again and continue to reform what's there.
So I guess that's one of the things that maybe one of the positive things that some people may have experienced during the lockdowns and the pandemic has been that they have, if they can reflect now, they may have surprised themselves in how resilient they are to change, mm-hmm. and how they are accepting of change, sorry, and how resilient they are of the things that have been going on around, and they've managed to make things work, and it's been tough, but that's a learning for them to go into the future. And like you say, if there's more to come of this, more yeah. waves or more other things that are happening, they can refer back to that strength that they've sort of developed through this period and new working ways, and they can implement those to navigate something that could be difficult again in the future. Is that what you're saying?
That's not been what I've been saying, but I like that. And I agree with it.
I was listening to you, Jane. I feel like that's what you were saying. What were you saying in a nutshell? Give me the elevator pitch.
Well, no, I think you're drawing on like resilience and inner strength, which I think is fantastic.
No, not inner strength, but the ability, they may have surprised themselves in the ability to adapt to what was from the outside. If you were looking a year ago and you said, oh, there was going to be this thing, many people may be like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to cope with that. But they have coped with it and they have shown resilience. But,
yeah, no, I think that's great.
But you were saying...
No, it's just an addition to what I was saying and I like it.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't need to paraphrase what I was saying. That's cool.
I wasn't trying to reflect or clarify.
I
was using your points as a mere springboard to put across my thoughts. So for employers to change, though, I'm John. I'm working in a company that's got thousands of employees. I've got a line manager. He's got a manager. There's a director. There's a big boss. How do I have the ability or the confidence to approach them if they're not going to change their ways?
Well, sometimes I think
you
might find yourself, John, in an organisation where John doesn't really fit in the organisation and is thinking bigger than the organisation, and the organisation's got too big a leap to make to catch up with John.
Yeah, but so John can't change jobs. So, John needs this job, but he needs it to work for him. He needs to have that conversation. How does he have to...
So I think it's about showing up each day and saying as much as John can, where he's still being true to himself and not just going along with things that he doesn't agree with or that he can see aren't working anymore. So finding his voice and trying as best he can to articulate that and to pull on that resilience that you talked about, and that what I would call sort of inner strength or inner power to believe that he has a value and his feelings are worth sharing, and that holding it in and biting his bottom lip and just getting on with it isn't going to change anything. So all of us together, all of the Johns together, can bring about change. So John could have conversations with other Johns and collectively then start to push up. And essentially, eventually, dismantle the hierarchy, because what you're talking about is a very outdated...
Anarchist.
Well, very outdated... model that
is outdated, and I agree with that 100%, but it's still there.
Sure, not and for long, hopefully, but
yeah, you just have to feel for people, I think, who there's some people, many people, who are quite have a good relationship with their boss or are confident enough to raise issues and not feel embarrassed or not feel worried about the outcome of that, raising that issue. But there will be some people, I'm not talking about myself, but I may be talking about myself, who struggle to approach those issues, even though they know it's the right thing to do for themselves, but they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to, you know, yeah, they don't want to jeopardize their position. But it needs to happen.
Yeah, it's the only way that we're going to really change.
When we were walking earlier,
you talked.
We went
about...
for a walk earlier, by the way. We mentioned it twice now.
Just
living the dream.
Just referencing so that you remember.
Yeah, yeah.
That you were talking about how so many organisations are set up in such a way that there's this kind of, it is like a pyramid, and it's like that everybody in the lower realms of this pyramid are like slaves, carrying out all the things at the beck and call of those at the top, right?
Yeah.
Those weren't your words. I'm doing what you did to me earlier. Just trying to recall what you were saying, okay? You talked about the fact that essentially so many of these organisations where there's this top-down kind of command and control, authoritarian type of structure at the top, they can impress on their workers, their slaves essentially, that that they need X, Y and Z carried out, and if they don't carry it out in the way that they've commanded, then they'll just be let go of and replaced. And so it can keep people held in this sort of suspended state of fear that their job would be at jeopardy if they didn't follow out the kind of direct commands that they've been given. Now, really, where there is an organisation that's still set up in that very outdated way, when people like John start to wake up and realise that actually the power is in their hands, because without all the Johns in that scenario, the person at the top can't do anything and has nothing, and because they need the Johns to do the hard work.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, it's always been this kind of transactional exchange that the company has the power because they pay your wages. And it's often forgot that, no, you're providing them a service that they need.
Mm-hmm.
So you have as much weight as they do in some respects because they can't operate as a business. And yeah, their argument would be, well, I can get someone else to do it. But there's only one you. And you might be the right person to do that. And like you say, if everybody withdrew from that, they wouldn't have anybody.
This is what I'm talking about.
I understood that one. I did listen this
time. No, but I just mean it's the collective power that we sometimes forget we have, that when we do stand up and speak our truth, others then get woken and stirred into talking their truth and coming alongside
us. Definitely inspires people, doesn't it?
And I think it is the only way forward at the moment if we really want to bring about any change, where some organisations will think they can just go back to how it was. The wake-up call needs to be everybody coming together if their voice isn't being heard alone.
Definitely. And if you feel it's hard in a big organisation where you may not have that relationship with your colleagues across a broader sort of spectrum of the business. You may just know the people you sit next to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I think you're right that it only takes a couple of people to agree and to support what you're saying in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to be something positive that you're trying to change. That it will then get the attention of, because your boss might agree with you. You're like line manager.
Yeah.
And then they might not have a boss above them that agrees with them. But if there's enough swell from underneath, then maybe that can change. But that idea of collective change mm-hmm. is a much bigger topic about society in general. Is that right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it
definitely and is. A much bigger topic about how we look at the planet, how we're looking after the planet, how we're making choices on a day-to-day basis that we're just sort of swimming along blindly, following patterns that we believe are right, but we never question.
Well, we don't believe they're right. We do.
No, some people do. That's what I'm saying. Like,
but I think you'd find if you had conversations with people outside
I can't, Jane. because you talk my ear off every time. You know, I try to talk to people, I try to phone people. No, no, got to listen to your way. And that's why I get it wrong, because I'm sick of listening. No, I'm not.
I think most people have a version that they're talking about inside their head or with their partner or with their close friends or with those that are like-minded that they know have got similar, kind of are on a similar page to them, have their version of what they feel needs to happen. And yet it's a bold and big leap
to
go beyond their comfort zone to voice that. And so they have these thoughts and ideas, but they still go along with the sheep and the herd and whatever everybody else is doing, because they feel like
the fish metaphor, but
they feel like there's no other option or there's no other choice or there's no, and there are quite often no other options, no other choices at the moment, because we've all kind of slotted into this system that we have around us that's determining the way our organizations are run, the way that schools are set up, the way that anything works to date or has been working. But that is what I'm talking about that can change.
The structures of our society.
Yeah.
The pillars that underpin our day-to-day lives.
Well, we are the pillars is what I guess I'm saying.
We are the people.
And we need to assemble ourselves in a different configuration rather than some sort of little hierarchical clusters.
Yeah. I mean, when you say it, it sounds quite kind of, I don't know, Hunger Games-y. Not that I've really watched any of those movies, but I think it isn't about uprising so much as more of a discussion and change that people need to... You don't feel that strong enough. I can tell by the way you're looking at me, you feel it needs to be something more dramatic. I think you want to be the...
I think it is an uprising.
Yep. Oh, dear.
I don't think...
And thanks for listening to today's podcast, guys. Me and Jane on different pages.
It does need to be an uprising, but not to the extent of a Hunger Games.
No, gosh. Gosh, no, we wouldn't go that far. Yet.
Well, if we don't, right, that's where it could go.
Jane, I feel like I'm trying to
keep this
normal, and I'm trying to reel you. No, next you're going to be talking about tunnels under the ground to China, and I don't know what else. So I agree, though, and I think hopefully the people listening to this will understand where we're both coming from, that collective change can be a hugely positive and powerful tool. You're not agreeing with that.
No, I totally am. Positive change has already started happening.
Oh, nice.
And the ideas and the thoughts that we are having, and the fact that there are people saying, oh, wait a minute, you're expecting me to go back to the office. I don't really know if that's what I want to do, which is
where
we started.
That's where we started, and hopefully we're learning.
Those little indicators that we get that uprise within us are the pieces that we need to grasp and run with.
Yep.
And not just go, oh, well, that's I had nice this thought. Feeling, but I'll put that back in my bag because I've got to go to the office today and I just need to suck it in and do it because that's just what's expected of me. No, enough of that. Like, you know, it's those bits that come up inside us we now need to act on, not being a bulldozer, like, and, you know, oh, we're all going to get our, you know, our whatever's out and bulldoze down. Like, you know, I'm not talking about in a destructive, aggressive, anarchist type way. I'm talking about taking that inspiration that comes from a positive place fueled by hope and potential for change and thinking, okay, there's me having this thought, I'm going to be brave enough today to share that with somebody next to me and let's see, maybe actually also have some sort of opinion, and wait a minute, they think they're on their own thinking it, but they're not.
Do you know, that's a really strong point actually, and I didn't mean to interrupt, but I have. Because I wanted to share something with you. Sometimes I have a group of friends, like certain friends that I've been friends with a long time, and you just don't feel comfortable. I just don't feel comfortable sharing these feelings, what we talk about a lot, to that group of friends. because I don't feel like they are on the same page with me on those kind of things. And it can be frustrating because they're your friends. And yeah, I've got other friends. But sometimes it takes that short conversation with somebody that maybe a new friend or somebody that you don't know as intimately as your close friends. And it can be a freeing conversation because there is no preconception of who you are or what you were when you were younger and you knew each other. There's just this new friendship or this new interaction that you've had with someone. And you can say something that is totally liberating that you haven't said to somebody else other than maybe your partner or to your family member or whoever. And that person's reaction will be very different to what you would expect to have from your friends that you know how they feel about things. So that in itself is a great reminder that if you feel comfortable, you know, we're not, I'm not saying you should be sharing these things with, you know, the first person you bump into 2 meters away on the street, but you, if you have a little interaction, sometimes those little interactions can be really powerful moments.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
sharing a conversation outside a school gate, okay, before Corona, with somebody that you don't necessarily know, and then them lighting up a bit because they've actually been feeling the same thing. That's actually a really, really great thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a that small, like that, the thing that I took from what you said there was that don't ignore those feelings that come up and those thoughts that come up, and then try to share them with somebody because you don't know where that could lead.
Yeah, don't be scared to speak your truth, but whatever's coming up for you.
I feel like Speak Your Truth is quite Mind Body Spirit America, okay. 2010. but I mean, yeah, don't be afraid to
say how you feel.
Say how you feel. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've reframed that so it's less kind of,
Anthony Robbins.
Yeah, Anthony Robbins. I think it's just Tony Robbins. I don't think he calls himself Anthony Robbins.
I don't know. I was just thinking on that day whenever our car wouldn't start and I had a conversation with the RAC man who arrived, for example.
Yeah, crazy. Because you would not expect, you wouldn't have ordinarily expected the RAC man to be on the same page as you with all your conspiracy theories. But he was. I mean, and we're not going down that route now, Jane. I'm going to rein you in on those.
But yeah, be a shade bolder. And
be a shade bolder.
And say how you feel.
And have that conversation.
And believe that it's possible for things to change.
Yeah.
And push for what you feel is fair and push for what you feel is right. Because that's been really something that's been
coming up a lot recently. Yeah.
Recently.
Yeah.
And we've gone out of our comfort zones in order to, just to ensure that some things were looked at in a different light by the people who had that sort of authority or whatever in a very hierarchical structured organized, you know, setting for different, a couple of different things, right?
I think that, and if you're listening and you're thinking, oh, it's okay for them to say that, be more like, you know, looking for justice and all these things, but it's not me, I can't do that because of my situation. Like, I'm really not that guy that's like, going to challenge people, but sometimes you have to, enough is enough, you know, and you have to step up. Like, I'm not hugely, confident in doing those things, but I realized, and hopefully people who struggle with this can realize too, that if you don't do it, it's not going to change.
You'll be forever feeling.
Yeah. And allow yourself to indulge those feelings. Like, if that you have these ideas and feelings that you think are different, don't shut them off. Like, allow yourself to just think, okay, maybe I could explore this a bit more, rather than saying, well, that's just how I think, but nobody else thinks like that, so it's not worth me talking about. You will be surprised how different people think, and there will always be somebody close to you or someone within your sphere that would support an idea that you might have or thought they may have.
But, and equally, I think it is a time for recognizing when you have outgrown a place, or not outgrown is perhaps the right word, but you've been on some kind of slight, I don't know, like shifting of or development of your feelings about something, and it's meant that you've kind of gone off on a separate path to other people around you, either in a friendship group or an organisation you work in that you just feel like you no longer fit in.
Yeah.
It might just be that you suddenly realise that the way that you had been going along with the mainstream narrative, for example, you just can't buy into that anymore for whatever reason, and you just need to go it alone.
And it's okay. It's okay to change. It's okay to say, like, I don't feel like this anymore. I've changed my opinion on something. I've changed. Nothing should be fixed. So if you felt like something a year ago and you've changed your opinion on it, that's fine. If other people can't adapt to you changing, that's not on you. That's on that's on them.
But also, it doesn't need to always be this. What did we say?
Extremity. It doesn't need to be one or the other, does it?
Yeah. And so you know, John might feel that being in that organisation every day of the week and going back into the office isn't right for him. The organisation aren't progressive enough to say, okay, you can work flexibly, you can remote work 3 days a week, but he maybe could agree, get some agreement to go part-time, and he finds something else that lights him up more and he feels more free to be himself. And then he kind of makes a
transition
from one thing to another, step by step, stage by stage, not just I'm jacking my job in, oh shit, I've got no job, I can't pay the rent.
Language.
Because that's what it sounded like your, you know, the big thing for John was that he was in something that he was dependent on. And I think that's also what we need to
free yourself off that.
Well, because sometimes I think people can feel totally trapped, as if they don't if they don't have that job anymore, then suddenly every door around them is closed.
There
and
is
that's
that,
just not true.
There is that feeling that, and I think a lot of people would feel similar to this, is that, but I can't, because if I lose this job, that's my money, this is my whole livelihood, work is more important than everything. And yes, those things are true. Like, you know, you have people set up their lives very differently financially and what they require each month and how much they save and how much they don't save. So a job is really the stability of that income. But like you're saying, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be, you know, just leaving it.
And that does seem to be one of the things that we're led to believe in our society, that it does seem to be.
Now is the time to ask for the change, because we've been through such a big change with Corona. Now is the time for a boss or an organisation to be a bit more open to flexibility, in my opinion. They're more likely to be open to that flexibility because they've seen it, they've experienced it. And if a business, you know, the strictest business run by a person who doesn't believe in it at all, if there's a blanket no, trust me, there's still a way. There's still a way to find some sort of balance for what you need. Especially if you're valued at some point in that in that equation. And if you're not valued,
then do you really want to be there?
But that's you know, that's in John's scenario. John is not me, just to be clear. Nothing to do with me. The way Jane was talking and looking at me, which luckily you couldn't see, suggested that she saw elements of John in me. She didn't.
There's elements of John in all of us.
I think there is. We're all a little bit John. But I think it's been a really good topic today, because I think this is affecting a lot of people. But also there's a lot going on for an employer. That, you know, we're not employers, so we don't know how these big companies are thinking and how, you know, there's so many more intricacies to that. But you are valuable to that employer. And if they value you, which they should, then they should be willing to experiment in how they can be more flexible in employing you.
Yeah, I think, again, it all just comes back to keeping your power in for yourself. And it starts as well by looking at how are you being flexible yourself, and how can you set things up with that, like almost like modelling in your own life, that agility.
That's a really good thing, Jane, you touched on there. I think if you're expecting it of somebody else, yeah, you should review where you do it yourself, or how you can implement it yourself, because that doing it in other areas of your life will give you more confidence that you can do it in that, in your work environment, which you may not already have, but also it will demonstrate to somebody, you know, you have proven to be able to do this. Like, and there's no better feeling than knowing that something works for you, that a method works for you. And I think that's a good way to test it, is in other areas of your life. So if you're thinking about having a more flexible working approach, how could you have a more flexible approach at home with balancing things with your partner, or with, you know, with your hobbies or your interests or your relationships. And that can only
or the way you eat, or, you know,
exactly again, anything
it's
that
not, it doesn't we approach so many things as all or nothing, and
it could be just a small thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. The way your morning routine, what you know, maybe you've had this rigid morning, or maybe your morning routine is chaotic. Maybe putting a morning routine in that allows you more flexibility to do other things could help. Well, that's all we have time for on today's podcast, Jane. That's been...
Yeah, time to wrap it up.
Time to wrap it up indeed. That's been really good. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed talking about that, talking about John. I think John's got some food for thought, but also completely confused and wondering why we were even talking about the Hunger Games at one point. please do join us on the next episode. That's all we have time for today. That's goodbye from me.
And from me, and Blade.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. Homeworking is such a big topic at the moment with all that's going on, and I hope you managed to take away some really positive points from it that can help you maybe readjust your working systems. If you really like the podcast, you can subscribe at iTunes and Spotify, and also find out more information about us at balanceology.uk.